Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Matt Gutierrez. Matt joined Synopsys in 2000 and is currently Senior Director of Marketing for Processor and Security IP and Tools. His current responsibilities include the worldwide marketing of ARC processors and subsystems, security IP, and tools for the development of application-specific instruction set processors. Prior to joining Synopsys, Matt held various technical and management positions with companies such as Cypress Semiconductor, Fujitsu Limited, and the Silicon Group. Matt has over 25 years of experience in the semiconductor, computer systems, and EDA industries. Welcome to the podcast, Matt.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Daniel.
First, let me ask, what originally brought you to semiconductors? Do you have an interesting story you can share with us?
Well, I started my career at General Motors back when mechanical engineers greatly outnumbered electrical and computer engineers. And boy, have those ratios changed pretty dramatically, especially in recent years. I went to grad school, joined a semiconductor startup when I got out of grad school. And I've been tied to this industry in some way, shape, or form ever since, including stints at tech companies from startups to large corporations, developing IP, developing chips, developing complete systems. So I kind of feel like the semiconductor industry picked me rather than the other way around. And ironically, with the electrification of cars and the push towards autonomous vehicles, automobiles have become one of the most prominent market segments for electronics and therefore semiconductors that we've seen tremendous growth and interest in recent years. So we have a very strong business in automotive. I've kind of come full circle where I am dealing with a lot of automotive designs and companies again.
Oh, interesting. And what brought you to Synopsys?
I came to Synopsys through an acquisition. I joined the design services organization where we helped customers implement and verify their SoCs. I've had a bunch of roles within Synopsys since then, most recently, as you said in your introduction, in the IP business unit, where I oversee the product management of our processor, security, and wireless IP product lines.
Right. So let's talk about RISC-V. Just first, what is RISC-V?
RISC-V is fundamentally an instruction set architecture, or sometimes called an ISA. And some people confuse, I'm glad you asked that question, some people confuse RISC-V to be a chip or a company. But think of an ISA as essentially a spec that defines how software will operate on a chip's hardware. It's the set of commands that the processor's hardware understands, decodes, and execute. It's that final layer of a software program being mapped to the chip's hardware. That's fundamentally what RISC-V is.
Right. And so it's an open standard. That means anyone can develop a RISC-V processor, right?
The short answer is yes. In fact, many companies are implementing their own versions of RISC-V processors to replace either hardwired logic that they have with the requirement of making it programmable or as a proprietary processor on their chips. You know, chips have a tremendous number of processors on them, not just the main processor. And so RISC-V has been adopted and implemented on a variety of chips in various functions across a whole bunch of application areas.
So what is driving growth in RISC-V adoption?
I'll point to a few things. First of all, the open standard, the fact that it's an open standard really means the potential for market innovation and the implementation choices themselves. So as I mentioned, ISA, the RISC-V is an ISA. It's basically a spec. It's not limited to a single set of offerings from one vendor. So there are implementation and innovation opportunities for companies to develop their own RISC-V processors for their suited application. And the implementation is really where kind of the rubber meets the road, because the fact that RISC-V is an open standard does not mean it's free, in the sense that it comes down to the investment and the expertise required to do an implementation. So I think the openness of RISC-V helps create for the market those implementation choices. I think another reason why RISC-V is being adopted in a growing level is design flexibility. So the ISA is inherently extensible, meaning that users can customize the instruction set for specific applications and specific workloads. And let's see, I would say last but definitely not least, processor implementations succeed or fail by the quality of the ecosystem and the size of the ecosystem. Processors have to be programmed. So you need operating systems, you need tools, you need firmware. And RISC-V has garnered quite a bit of support in the ecosystem. We have lots of interest from our customers in adopting RISC-V, in part because of the broad ecosystem, gives them choices again of the tools and the software that they can use and adopt to deliver a complete hardware software solution. And so at the end of the day, it's the hardware and the flexibility and the choices they have in the implementation, but it's also the software ecosystem that's required for adoption and success.
Are there limitations to RISC-V or use cases for which it isn't really a suitable option?
Not technically. If you look even now across the RISC-V community, you see implementations from ultra low power embedded cores all the way to high performance processors for data centers. And a lot of recent momentum in automotive, as I kind of alluded to earlier. And because the ISA is extensible, there's room to optimize it in the future for specific or evolving applications and workloads, things like vector processing or machine learning. Now, as I mentioned before, access to software and operating systems or tools to create them also play a big role in determining whether or not a given processor ISA is suitable for a specific use case. And this is a strength of the RISC-V ISA, which, as I mentioned, has a broad and rapidly growing ecosystem. So that software development and contributions from both open source community and from leading commercial vendors make it well-suited for an increasingly broad range of applications.
Do you see obstacles that might affect the RISC-V momentum in the future?
I don't see any obstacles that are specific to RISC-V as an ISA. Now, having said that, in the early days of RISC-V, there were concerns about fragmentation because the ISA is by design, of course, flexible and extensible. So one of the ISA's greatest strengths was also at risk of becoming one of its biggest obstacles if there became so many different versions of the ISA that the ecosystem just couldn't keep up. But now RISC-V International manages a finite set of ISA profiles. And these profiles are a common set of baseline instructions and mandatory extensions that target specific application workloads. And therefore, these profiles become the targets for the software ecosystem to rally around. And now providers of operating systems and compilers and debuggers, they can be assured of software portability with their code when it runs on RISC-V processors that adhere to these generic profiles. In other words, the profiles basically provide a level of compatibility to prevent a situation where all the programs need to be recompiled for every possible combination of RISC-V ISA implementation. And of course, we are adopting these common profiles in our ARC-V processor IP.
So why would a customer want to extend the ISA?
We have lots of experience in this area because ARC, our historical ARC implementations, are also extensible. And customers extend the ISA for reasons you might expect, for improving performance in the form of reducing cycle counts, or for power efficiency, or for code density. So think of it this way. If there is a function or a limited set of functions that the processor is performing commonly, in other words, that it spends most of its time addressing or running software for some specific functions, and you create custom instructions to accelerate those algorithms, you can greatly reduce the cycle count. And reducing the cycle count and potentially the code size has significant benefits. The obvious ones are performance, it'll run faster, but also it consumes less energy because if it is reducing cycle count, then the processor isn't busy as often. So efficiency in both performance in the form of cycle count or lower power or energy consumption, that is a common use of ISA extensions. You can also imagine many customers adding ISA extensions to add functionality, like special instructions for doing digital signal processing or instructions for doing security or machine learning. So our customers currently have a lot of experience implementing, more than half of our customers implement their own instructions to accelerate their specific workloads.
And what is Synopsys doing to support SoC developers in implementing RISC-V processors?
Obviously, helping SoC developers implement and verify their chips is practically Synopsys's mission statement, and that's irrespective of the processor IP used in the SoC. But we do have an increasing number of customers adopting RISC-V, and we're supporting them in a variety of ways. Obviously, we now have the ARC-V processor IP, but we also have a market-leading portfolio of other standards-based IP for interfaces, for example, such as PCI Express and USB, as well as foundation IP like standard cell libraries and memory compilers. I mentioned earlier that some companies that are adopting RISC-V are designing their own RISC-V processors to replace proprietary cores or hard-coded logic. And for those customers looking to build their own versus buying off-the-shelf IP, we offer a tool called ASIP Designer that automates the creation of custom RISC-V processors. From an EDA perspective, Synopsys offers quick start implementation kits, which we shorthand as QUICs, for a number of processors, including ARC-V. And think of these QUICs as a set of scripts and design constraints, and even a baseline floor plan that help customers get to their PPA goals faster. And furthermore, for pre-silicon software development, we have virtualizer development kits for ARC-V and support for system-level exploration and optimization and tools like Platform Architect. So really, a broad range of development support on both the hardware and software side for ARC-V customers.
Right. You know, Synopsys has been in the processor IP business for a long time. How does ARC-V fit in your strategy today?
It really builds on the expertise and the experience that we have developing and deploying extensible processor IP. So in a very practical way, ARC-V extends, not replaces, our current CPU offerings, which will continue to be adopted by both existing and new customers. We have no intentions of discontinuing the current portfolio. And when or if current ARC customers want to migrate to RISC-V, we're easing that transition by providing them with similar hardware packaging and configuration tools that they're used to seeing. And more importantly, from a software perspective, by continuing to provide a familiar programming environment with our Metaware software development toolchain, and also by facilitating third-party ecosystem partners who are also investing in tools and software for ARC-V. So it's all about giving customers more choices for both their hardware and their software development so they can optimize the investments that they make. I should also highlight that we've seen in recent years the rise of heterogeneous processing in more and more applications, where in addition to the CPU, designers are implementing specialized processors for workloads such as digital signal processing, machine learning. So ARC-V complements very nicely our portfolio, which we call ARC-VPX, our DSP IP, and the ARC-NPX NPU product lines. And so those are specialized processors for DSP and machine learning workloads. And we connect all of these things with a single software development toolchain to make programming these multiprocessor designs easier.
That's great. You know, I've been a big fan of ARC for a long time. You know, as I mentioned, I worked for Viraj Logic when we purchased Arc, and it was an amazing process. And right after, not long after that, Synopsys purchased Viraj, of course. And I'm also a big fan of RISC-V. So, you know, seeing these two together, and I must say that Synopsys has just done an excellent, excellent job of working with Arc and keeping it, you know, up to date and competitive. You know, I just can't say that enough. It's just been so impressive.
Well, thank you. We're excited about this new chapter in the Arc roadmap.
Yeah, I saw you guys at the RISC-V conference last year, maybe November, I think it was. And I was so impressed by the conference in itself because there were so many papers from all over the world. I mean, you know, a lot of papers from China, a lot of people from India, really, really good papers, including from Synopsys. And I think RISC-V is doing an amazing job. And, you know, I also track design starts, and I see RISC-V based processors on just about every design start now, you know, in all different places and all different levels. So I tell you, the momentum is increasing, you know, by the day in my experience.
We see the same thing. And I think when SoC developers have more choices to, at their disposal, I think that's good for the industry.
Hey, well, I appreciate your time, Matt. This has been a great conversation, and hopefully we can have another conversation maybe later in the year just to get an update and get a little more perspective, because this has been great.
Okay, would love to do it.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.